Good evening. Welcome, everyone. Ziggy, could you turn on the side lights, the house lights, so that we can all see each other? Thank you. Well, I'd like to talk a little bit about outflows, leaking, not the leaking from all of this winter rain, but our personal leaking of ego, outflow. At the end of the lecture, before we go home tonight, we'll be reciting the Bodhisattva vows. Us Zen Buddhists have vowed to save all beings as Bodhisattvas, enlightening beings. We've taken this vow to help others with the realization of their own Buddhahood. And in Buddhism, being saved or liberation is when we realize our intimacy, our non-separation, our unity with all things. And as bodhisattvas that want other people to have this liberation, we can't do it from a self that says, I'm this self over here with a pretty good idea about liberation, and you're that self over there that I'd like you to hear this good idea. We can't do it from a body and a mind of ego and self that's separate from others. If we're going to save people with their realization that they are intimate and not separate from others, we do it with our body and mind that is intimate and not separate from others. So we don't have leaking or outflows is really just a demonstration. You can just imagine that, oh, this ego of mine is really making itself known now. It's leaking from under my shoes and causing this big space that's defining me and separating me from from all beings. So the sutras say that bodhisattvas are without outflows. The Sanskrit word for outflow is ashrava, and it can mean leaking or effluent, to get into to keep the plumbing and flowing theme going. But it can also be poisons, a puddle of poison around me. Canker, or a taint, So those are all the words that come up in the sutras that mean outflow, that mean ego, that mean when we're demonstrating that we think we're a separate self and that there are separate selves and separate things in our life. The sutras, the older Pali sutras, define three categories of the sources of these outflows, this ego that comes up and stains the rest of the world. One source of the outflow is our attachment to a self, our ego. Another outflow, source of outflow is our grasping nature, how we hold tightly to objects of our senses. I love this kind of food. I don't like this kind of food. I'm holding pretty tightly to this one over here. I'm rejecting that one over there. That's a source of an ego or a self that's arising, our grasping. And then the third source of outflow is ignorance. And this isn't an ignorance like not getting an 800 on the SATs. It's, ignorance is the first stage in the 12-fold, in the 12 links of the chain of samsara. Samsara is our conventional life, and ignorance starts that whole chain reaction to this life of suffering and self and ego and being separate from others rather than harmoniously intimate with others. So this ignorance is kind of not paying attention to your life, not looking at your life, how it affects yourself, how it affects others. What's the popular term? An unexamined life. That's the ignorance. Kind of going through life, not paying too much attention. In fact, excuse me. In fact, every moment that we're not paying attention to our intimacy, our non-separation from the rest of the world, every moment that we are on automatic, we're leaking some. We're out there separating ourselves from others, and we're kind of leaking all over the place. So when we forget, when we're not paying attention to our life, when we're holding pretty tightly to a good idea, when we're kind of maneuvering for the best possible position, then we're leaking. We're exhibiting outflows. So the Sarangama Sutra has ways that we can remember our intimacy and non-separation from all things, or with all things. The Sarangama Sutra means the sutra examining the durability of all phenomena. It's a funny name for a Mahayana sutra. You know, one of the basic teachings of the Buddha is that all things are impermanent. All things pass. Things arise and they'll fade away. But the Sarangama Sutra that explains the durability of all phenomena, its main point is that everything in the world, this lectern, these chairs, these clothes, this person, we're all made up of the stuff of enlightenment. That this stuff is nothing but enlightenment. And actually, Buddhism even says that enlightenment is empty, and but if the stuff in our life is made up of nothing but enlightenment, that's probably about as durable as we can get in this life. I mean, if the tag on the back of my undershirt said 100% enlightenment, I think it was a pretty good stuff. And that's what the Buddha teaches, is that the reason that we're intimate, that we're not separate, that we are just one thing, that we're unified, is that we're all the same stuff, and that stuff is nothing but brilliant, luminous, clear enlightenment. So this is what this is the main teaching of the Sarangama Sutra, and even as nice as it is, the sutra admits that we sometimes forget this. We sometimes forget and think that we're a separate self, and that there's all these separate things in the universe. So it gives us three ways to kind of keep us on board, to help us remember that even in this world of we're in the Saha world. Isn't that the grasping world? Isn't that what Saha means? Isn't that what the grasping, even in this grasping Saha world where we think that there's one thing to grasp that's better than the other thing, we can remember our intimacy and non-separation. And the first way we do this is that it says very clearly, we avoid garlic. We avoid pungent herbs. So they took their food very seriously in 2,500 years ago. Maybe like we are now, you know, maybe, you know, some of us are vegans and some of us are macrobiotics, and some of us will only eat grass-fed beef. So 2,500 years ago, bodhisattvas avoided garlic. And as a matter of fact, There are some Buddhist groups today that still don't eat allium, onions, no onions either. Scallions are out. But it was thought that cooked pungent herbs caused lust, and raw pungent herbs caused anger, and those two unwholesome mind states were what really kept us from remembering the unity and the harmony and the intimacy of all things. You know, that's not, you know, that's what Freud said. You know, Freud said is all of our actions is either lust or aggression. Picking up these glasses, lust or aggression. I think he also said that sometimes glasses are just glasses. I've heard that before. Lust and anger. So I say that a little tongue in cheek, but it's actually in there. And I think that about the pungent herbs as being number one. And I think it's more about paying attention, the antidote to ignorance, paying attention to when lust or grasping is arising, and when anger or aversion is arising. So that's one way to remember. The second way is practicing the precepts, practicing the ethical guidelines that the Buddha taught. A disciple of Buddha doesn't kill. A disciple of Buddha doesn't take what isn't given, and so forth. On one level, following those precepts, those ethical guidelines, walking on this floor, walking on this earth, really is all about being harmonious with all the dharmas, all the things, all the phenomena around you. So that makes pretty good sense. Practicing the precepts is a way of being harmonious and modeling our harmonious, intimate nature for all things. And the third thing that the sutra or the Buddha teaches us to remember, our non-separation, is to practice our zazen, practice our meditation, and then Dogen comes in a thousand years later and says that this meditation is about dropping body and mind, dropping this ego, this self that is separating, separating the world out into bits and pieces. And in our meditation, in that 40 minutes just before the talk, when our mind was quiet, when the thoughts were less frequent, and less distracting, we were experiencing that just sitting, dropping body and mind, the body and mind that prefers this over that. We were willing to just sit here with anything that that the universe was going to bring us for those 40 minutes. You know, it's a little hot in this room, but I was going to sit with it. I could sit in this room for 40 minutes. I wasn't going to reject the temperature. I was just going to sit in this room that maybe was a little hot. Even saying that is a picking or choosing. So this 40 minutes that we sat, dropping body and mind, experiencing the intimacy and non-separation with all things. So those are the three things that the Buddha recommends to remember our Buddha nature, this nature that we have of intimacy and non-separation and being Buddha. But we're Buddhas that are right here walking on the earth, because we want to make sure that before we go settle in to Shita heaven, we want others to realize their own Buddha nature, their own intimacy and harmony. So these three things, help us loosen our grasp onto the sense objects that we like, the food that we like, and loosen that grasping nature, loosen the grasping to ourselves, and actually experience and live and remember in the intimacy and non-separation. And these practices have us look at our lives and step out of those 12 habit patterns that cause us to make the same darn mistakes over and over again and really get stuck. It helps us step out of that and really examine our life, and with the goal of reducing suffering and creating more intimacy. Today is International Women's Day. Today is also the day that we remember our first woman ancestor, Mahaprajapati, the foster mother of the young Buddha, and one of his first disciples on the path. I wonder if her Memorial Day was set up to be on International Women's Day. It was probably set up to be International Women's Day started in 1909, and probably they were celebrating the life of Mahaprajapati on a certain day before then. As Dana mentioned this morning during our ceremony, we can't really imagine our practice without the influence of all beings, no matter what gender they are. Of course, Mahaprajapati, in addition to raising the young Buddha, was also the biological mother of Sundari Nanda, another one of our women Buddhist ancestors. One of the male ancestors that we chant, Prajnatara, was reportedly a woman as well, her student was, her heir was Bodhidharma, the first Zen ancestor. And of course, Bodhidharma himself had four heirs, one of whom was a woman. Which brings us to the modern age of Blanche and Catherine, my teacher Catherine. So the practice and teaching of Buddhism is not separate from the lives and challenges of all people, no matter what gender. Today's theme for International Women's Day is Be Bold for Change. The marches earlier in the year, that was both of them were called women's marches, I think, reminded us that we could have been a little more bold back in November, and this practice takes a certain amount of boldness, a certain amount of fearlessness. Buddha's awakening story includes that what wasn't the bowl of milk kind of floating upstream? Wasn't something floating upstream? It was the bowl of milk, wasn't it? Yeah. And that's our practice. Our practice is a little bit going upstream in the midst of all of this, all of this turmoil, all of this busyness. We want to sit down and find the stillness at the heart of our being. We want to find this place that all of that enlightening stuff emerges from. That's a little against the grain. We want to kind of keep it simple. We don't want to be picking and choosing in this world of, you know, marketing for the better this or the better this or the bigger this or the faster this. We want to try to keep things simple. We want to practice patience with staying calm. So this this theme for the day, be bold for change. Be fearless. Remember that our practice is about swimming upstream. Really kind of fits our practice, this theme for today. Catherine had some ideas about intimacy and not being separate and saving all beings, the precepts and meditation. In one of her lectures, she reminds us of a quote from a modern Japanese teacher who said that a bodhisattva, that's us here, who've taken vows to save all beings. A bodhisattva is someone who's just turned themselves in the direction of the Buddha. That's all we have to do is wherever we are, just turn ourselves in that direction of intimacy and no separation. In all of our actions, it's not just about lust and aggression. In all of our actions, we just turn ourselves to the direction of intimacy and non-separation and harmony, which is the body and mind of Buddha. So that's a nice reminder that she gives us. One of Catherine's repeated teachings that I remember is she encouraged us to watch when the ego arises, watch when self arises, or this small self, not the intimate, non-separate self, but this small self that's kind of not paying attention to his actions in the world, that's maybe maneuvering himself for the best possible place in the sun. Just watch when that arises. And it comes up with living in the Saha world of grasping. It comes up pretty regularly. I remember once for one of our sesshins, one of our retreats, the cook wasn't able to do shopping, but was more than willing to be the cook for the weekend, and I volunteered to do the shopping. So she gave me the menu. And one of the menu items for lunch, we were going to have a bowl full of quinoa, which is a wonderful grain, but I don't like it plain. It's a little bitter. And so I said to myself, well, I'm doing the shopping here. I'll just fix this one thing. And actually, I like quinoa when it's mixed 50-50 and not a grain more or less, but 50-50 with millet, I think is a wonderful combination. So I bought that. And then I came back and I told her about it. And there was a little bit of a tightening, but because she was a bodhisattva and merging and intimate with all things, she just let it go. She just let it go. And I had to sort of sit with, gee, I've been doing this picking and choosing here. This ego, this self has arisen just in this simple, you know, bowl of grains for lunch. As we all know, that, you know, that's not the least of it. Time and time again during the day, Catherine encouraged us to watch when that ego arises. Of course, when we can get in the habit of watching, that of course is enlightenment, is the practice of putting down ignorance. And being a bodhisattva, when we're actually looking at when the ego arises, but But that was Catherine's, one of Catherine's consistent teaching. Watch when that self arises. Watch when it arises. In a lecture in 1996, she says, "We come to realize the Buddha body we are seeking. That Buddha body is inside ourselves, not somewhere else. The sutras say, take the backward step and turn the light inward to illuminate yourself." Catherine now says, "Illuminate the mind that doubts itself, that contradicts itself, that equivocates. Illuminate that mind. Illuminate, as I want to do, illuminate that mind that doesn't like plain quinoa. Instead of avoiding it or being pushed around by it, illuminate that mind. Open up completely into that mind. That is the mind of reality itself. That is actualizing itself." Someone asked me, so this is Catherine talking, "What is the effect of your sitting practice on your practice of the precepts? So how does your sitting practice inform your ethical standards that you demonstrate throughout your life?" Someone asked Catherine that. I replied, she said, "When I first took the precepts, I did it to be outside of my mind. I was going to study Buddhism. I was going to study Buddha's sutras. I was going to study the teaching of others. But after many years of externalizing my expectations, I came to see that for me, practice of the precepts begins with acknowledging my ordinary mind in its actual manifestation." I was actually going to look carefully at this mind of worry, of equivocation, of choosing. "This busy mind, sometimes clear, sometimes conflicted, is the human condition. We live in this mind with everyone, and the strength of our practice is that we finally come to realize this." So our practice of sitting and practicing the precepts, just the way that the Sarangama Sutra says, and just the way that Catherine was practicing, says that we realize that we are not separate from anyone or anything in this practice, and that that is the strength of our practice, and that is the mind and body of Buddha being not separate, being with, being intimate, being harmonious. When we realize that we are Buddha, we find everyone else is also. Generosity and kindness come forth. The person who irritates you, this person is also Buddha. From the point of view of myself, I have this history, Catherine says. I have these habits, these prejudices, these tendencies. From the viewpoint of liberation, these habits and prejudices just arise. No one invites them. They arise according to causes and conditions. Because of their inherent dependence on causes and conditions, these energies are not self. So each moment arises simultaneously, both as not self and as self. that's a pretty good way of being in the world as bodhisattvas, as enlightening beings, as remembering over and over that, that these emotions that arise in us, these actions that we do, they're just causes and conditions. They're not a fixed self or a personality. So that they're really not self. At the same time, from another viewpoint, they're only arising in this body and mind, so that they are self. So at the same time, it's not self and self, which is a little different than grasping on to the self that has a pretty good idea about who should be in government and who shouldn't be in government, that has a pretty good idea about how to do bows in the morning, or a pretty good idea about what food needs to be served at retreats. Always remembering that the energies that I experience are both not self and self is liberating, and a way of liberating others. What we are studying is the mind, not Catherine's mind, the mind arising as Catherine. And when Catherine can hear and accept everything that's going on in her mind, she can hear and accept everything that's going on in anybody else's mind. Nothing is outside of her mind. In that mind, there is no pressure to improve Catherine. It is to be without anxiety about non-perception, says the Dhammapada. From that place, there's no anxiety about right or wrong, and yet there is complete understanding of causes and consequences. So this was how Catherine described sitting, our sitting, our zazen, our meditation, and our practice of the precepts, that that helped her feel unified and not separate from all others that were also humans in her mind. And this is the way of the Buddha's teaching in the Surangama Sutra, practicing this meditation, practicing these precepts, practicing observing ourselves in the world, to fulfill our vows to save all beings, so that they can experience this bright, clear, brilliant light of intimacy and non-separation. Any thoughts? We have just a couple of minutes. I really liked that turn on the word, or turn on the idea of the durability of all things. When we work so hard to see the impermanence, but then to say, to see them as durable, to see them as nothing other than the stuff of enlightenment. been?
To start, I really enjoyed your talk.
Thank you.
And I guess I'll just make a few comments. So you were just talking about the durability of things. And I think that that is a very good aspect of reality to look at. And one of the teachers I like out of a different school of thought is Nisargadatta Maharaj. And the way he described it is like all the myriad things are gold's jewelry, but it's all gold. The only difference is in the appearance. And so in that way, all of these myriad things, all these appearances, they are made out of the same basic stuff. And what he sort of describes it as, what the words he puts it into, is it's all made out of the light of awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of is a... That's kind of a nice segue into the non-separation of things.
Mm-hmm.
Is you can look at it in that sort of way, is everything you could say exists in your consciousness is revealed by the light of your own awareness.
Mm-hmm.
It is nothing but
mm-hmm.
your own awareness.
Yeah.
And kind of going on with that theme, the ego, the idea of self seen as separate is based in the feeling of self. There's a sort of subtle feeling that comes with thoughts that makes it feel like you were the one who thought. And it's based in the nature of mind. It's dualistic. It makes comparative discernments. And the discernments, the duality is illusory. It's
mm-hmm.
it's just an imposition of understanding. And the way it works is it makes things finite. And that's sort of the nature of duality, is this as opposed to this. The two ends become finite. Whereas in reality, a more realistic way to look at it would be sort of as a continuum. Is self and other, it's not this and that, it's like two ends of the same stick.
Mm-hmm.
Or as Shunya Suzuki puts it, the boundary is a swinging door. It's not really a boundary, it's just sometimes going this way, sometimes going that way.
Yeah.
And so all things are sort of in that way an extension of each other.
Yeah. Yeah. And what a great practice to kind of like an alchemist that could look at everything and say, yes, that's the gold of enlightenment. What was the practice that we decided on in Tuesday's reading group? Reb, in Reb's book, he was suggesting to look at everything and say, what is this? It is a way of having that don't know mind that would be open and accepting and not so quick to categorize something, but what is this? And what a great answer to say this is the golden light of enlightenment too, and to have that practice with all phenomena and including the self. I think that's what Catherine meant. I may have been painting, you know, the arising of the self or the arising of the ego is something to be avoided. Whereas Catherine was reminding us, you know, even that is, when I notice it arise, can I say, yes, even this is made of the stuff of enlightenment.
Of course, I sort of forgot where I was going. Let me recuperate. Spirit. So you were saying everything is of the light of enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to get back to where I was. Sorry. Well, I guess never mind.
Yes, well, we'll end it there. Thank you very much. May the merit of our meditation, may the merit of our reflecting the golden light of enlightenment be directed towards remembering moment after moment, breath after breath, our intimacy and non-separation of all things. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's ways unsurpassable. I vow to become it.